The planet is restless, Captain. They want their podcast. And they shall have it. I'll beam down to the surface.
You have the bridge.
Captain, that is illogical. These are Trek fans. They will challenge and dissect your knowledge with great emotion. It is a mission fraught with danger, peril, and grave risk.
Suggestions?
Send in the red shirts.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is the pilot episode of The Red Shirts. This is our cage. This is our encounter at Farpoint. And this is our caretaker. Anybody know the episode title for DS9, Deep Space Nine?
Emissary.
The Emissary. This is our Emissary. Coming at you for the first time, I'm your host, Q Storm. You might recognize my voice from PodcastJuice.net, Prince Podcast, Geeked Out, all that good stuff over at Michael Dean's camp. But I also have a compatriot with me. His name is Big Sexy, otherwise known as Mark Wiggins. Mark, introduce yourself.
I think you just did. I come from the Podcast Juice realm as well. It's great to be here because Q and myself, major Trek heads, and of course, we don't agree on everything, so this will be fun.
And the third member of the Bridge crew, that would be Craig J. Johnston. Craig, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I don't have a cool name, but you can just call me Craig. Like, sure, you know. I'm famous like that. I used to do a lot of podcasting, but the one I do now is with John Romero, and we do a podcast called The Apple Time Warp, where we talk about these old Apple games. And John Romero is the guy that created Doom.
Nice.
But, oh, yeah. Him and I have a lot of fun doing this podcast. So I've cut down on my podcasting, but I'm looking forward to doing this one. It sounds like it's going to be a rave.
Okay, now what we're going to do now is, you know, we're talking about Star Trek. Listen, anyone knows, I can admit it, people who like Star Trek are a little nerdy, a little geeky.
Up your shaft.
So, here are my bona fides. I am a electronics geek. Anything and everything electronic, I'm probably going to go and buy it, even if I can afford it or not. I love Star Trek, and I love Star Wars. We can all get along. I'm all into the comic books and everything like that. So that's my geek, Craig. Big Sexy, why are you a nerd who likes Star Trek? What are your bona fides? What's your resume, your nerd resume?
Well, first of all, I stand 6'3", weigh north of 300 pounds.
Here we go.
And if anyone calls me a geek or a nerd, there's going to be a problem. Now, having said that, I have been an avid comic book reader since age 11. The very first book I ever read was Marvel Feature 11, featuring a Thing versus Hulk story. I am a sci-fi cat. I am a Star Trek guy. I'm not a Star Wars guy. I'm an electronics dude like you. I like to tinker with things. I'm a home theater and audiophile dork all day long. And if it's Marvel, it's for me. You know, DC, but if it's Marvel, I'm there.
And I couldn't agree with you more about that. Well, the first comic book I ever read was a Fantastic Four annual. It was the one with Reed Richards has Dr. Doom all wrapped and hemmed up. And it was probably back in 1979, 1980 maybe. First comic book I ever bought. But anyway, we're not going to talk about comic books. That's not what this is about. So moving on. Craig, give us your geek resume.
Well, I've been a Star Trek fanatic since the 70s and 80s. So the original series. I've watched every series of Star Trek. I'm a big Star Trek nerd. I'm not terribly much into Star Wars.
You're killing me.
Hey, Star Wars is infantile. Yeah, I see.
Oh, Mark, we're trying to gain fans. Jesus.
Sorry.
But actually, I'm enjoying it now that that Disney's taken it over, I must say. So I don't know if that makes me the wrong kind of geek, but
yeah, that you just dig the hole deeper, dude.
But yeah, I'm a gadget freak as well. I've been a gadget freak all my life, always picking up the latest gadgets, and I've been an Apple fanatic for my whole life as well. So if Apple sells something, I'm probably going to buy it. And yeah, that's me.
You know, I should have mentioned that as well, that I own, in my house, there are 5 Apple computers, 4 iPads, 3 iPhones, and 3 Mac MacBook Pros. So, I forgot to, that's probably the biggest component. But Craig, you're missing out. You're not revealing a big geeky thing that you do, which is a benefit to all mankind to a certain degree. You're a writer. Tell us about what you write.
Sorry, yeah, that's true. Yes, I'm a published author. I have about 22 books out there. I write for Pearson Publishing, and there's a series that's basically the upmarket version of the Dummies. It's called the My Series. And so I've written a bunch of books on different phones that are out there and different tablets. So it's essentially the, as I said, the colorful upmarket version of the Dummies, and tells people how to use their devices. It's fun. I enjoy doing it. It pays decently. And you're right. That is a fun little thing.
Hey, you're holding back. You can't do that on the show. So we're going to start this debut. You know, we thought long and hard about, okay, Star Trek has been around for, 50 years?
That's right.
50 yeah. years. I mean, what are we going to bring to this table? What the hell can we do that's going to make it fresh and new? Well, I think in my part, the end result was nothing. But so what? I recently started rewatching on Netflix all of the Voyager series. I saw it on UPN, the now defunct network. Loved it, and I decided I wanted to watch it again because looking at the new crop of Star Trek films, they're not well. Star Trek Beyond. Mark, calm down. Star Trek Beyond, I thought was entertaining. The first two, not so much. Now, and we're going to get into that in a future show. But the point being for now, I decided that if I really wanted to get my Trek that I know and love, let me go back to the source. So I decided to start watching Voyager. And it just made me feel like, you know what? I like talking about this. Big Sexy and I on the other podcasts or in the chat rooms, we would go back and forth about Star Trek. So I decided, let's talk about it on air. So that's what we're doing right now. And that leads us into the main topic of this series, of this show. What, it's a little bit cliched, but I don't care again. What was it that drew you into Star Trek? What made you become a Star Trek fan? Simple question, and we're going to start with Craig. Craig, why are you a Star Trek fan, and what made you become a Star Trek fan?
Yeah, so that's an interesting story. I was born and grew up in South Africa, and I grew up at a time when they had something called apartheid, and one of the things they did to keep apartheid in power, so to speak, was they didn't allow us to have television. So we're talking about the 60s and 70s with no television. All you could do was listen to the radio. And that was so that they could control the airwaves and make sure people didn't suddenly see families of mixed races. You know, it's a terrible thing. So eventually television came in 1976, very limited. It was like one channel, and it was on for like 10 hours a day or something. So before that, there were no such thing as rental stores where you could get VHS tapes or Betamax tapes or anything like that. So you couldn't watch stuff because nobody had TVs. So there would be no point, right? You couldn't plug it into anything. So the way that people used to do it is they used to have film projectors that you could rent. It sounds a bit antiquated. In the 70s, people are renting film projectors. And that's how you would do your rentals. So I was too young to actually, Mike, you and I are a similar age. So I was too young to watch the original series when it originally aired. So I would have caught it on the reruns. But since there was no television in South Africa, there was no reruns to watch. So I was at a church fete one day, and they were playing movies. You know, they'd rented a projector, and they had these 35mm films. Just so happens they were playing Star Trek episodes, and so I went up and started watching this. Well, I didn't know what it was, but I just got completely hooked into it. And after that, all I wanted to do when I watched some kind of video program was watch Star Trek. And eventually, when television came along, and you know, we caught up with the rest of the planet, then they started rerunning Star Trek, and they ran the original series.
Now let me jump in real quick. Which iteration of Star Trek was it that you were watching at that time?
Well, it was the original series. As I said, it was on film, but it was from the original series.
Oh, now you, when you say on film, you mean the cinematic versions of the original?
No, no, no. Because there was no television, as I said, the only way you could watch TV programs was on film. So you would have to rent, like I said, you have to rent a projector and you have to rent the film, but it's not a movie. It's just a TV show, but it's on a film media. It's on film media. That's what I mean. Yeah. So it's kind of, as I said, weird because the rest of the planet got TV in the late 40s. And there we are in this, you know, living on planet Earth with no television in the 70s. So that's the way I grew up. So that's how that will happen.
Now, forgive me if I sound ignorant, but are you telling me that your family would have to go out and rent a projector and to see any type of broadcasting or film?
Exactly. Instead of you going to Blockbuster and renting VHS tape, you would go to whatever the equivalent of Blockbuster was. You'd rent a projector and a bunch of films. Yeah.
That is amazing.
And those films would be TV shows, right? Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you think about it, it kind of made sense because all I think, you know, I'm not speaking from a technical standpoint, but I believe that all shows in the 70s and 60s were recorded on film anyway.
That's right,
aren't they? And then they were converted to video later on. So I think what they were doing were just taking the prints off the original films and just printing a lower quality version of that film. So it's fun because, you know, you go back and you watch Star Trek and it's like in HD and stuff. And you just think, well, how did they got an HD version of the original series? Well, it was originally recorded on film anyway, so which is HD. So, but yeah, it was a weird thing, but that's how I got into Star Trek.
That is, dude, you brought a lot more dimension to the story than either of us will be able to, we won't be able to top that. I should have had you go last. Well, wow, that was fascinating, as they say.
As Spock would say, yeah.
Exactly. So now, moving on, Big Sexy.
Yeah.
You're the man, you know. How did someone of your stature, of your fame and fortune, how did you get into the geeky pastime of Star Trek?
Well, it was real simple. You know, my mom liked it. And, you know, I was watching TV with her when I was really young. And
wait. Stop. Hold on. You're telling me your mom was a Star Trek fan?
I'm not saying she's a Trekkie or anything like that, but she liked watching the show.
Listen, cherish her. Wow, that's great.
She's a big sci-fi reader, actually. She likes, she'd always read things like Isaac Asimov and, you know, Ellery Queen and a lot of Twilight Zone and Outer Limits, that type of stuff. And so I'm watching it one day. I'm like, that looks interesting. And at that time, the show was already off the air. It was in syndication. This was like 1971, 72. And I'm just watching it, and I'm like, oh, this is fun. This is interesting. And then there was a local, like, horror movie guy named Bob Wilkins. He would always talk about Star Trek. Then all of a sudden, the Federation Outpost opened up. And the show wasn't on the air. But the Federation Outpost opened up, and the Trek people were still running around talking about it. It was always on the syndication. Then the cartoon started, which really got my attention, because I was a big cartoon guy. And from there, the first movie came out, and we'll discuss that later. And then it was actually redeemed with Wrath of Khan. Wrath of Khan brought it all back, made it all better. We're like, okay, let's go. And then, you know, as we all know, from that point on, a few years later, it spawned Next Generation. And I was as skeptical as anybody when that first came out. But I gave it a shot, and the second season they turned it around, and, you know, the rest is history.
Nice. So, for me, it was a long journey. Okay, so, what year did the motion picture come out? 79, right?
79. Yes.
I knew of Star Trek prior to the movie coming out. I think I probably knew more of the cartoon than the syndicated show. But I mean, it was like on my periphery, but I never watched it. And I remember going to see Star Wars, and then Star Trek came out as a response to Star Wars, I guess. And I went to see it with some friends of mine. And I was, that movie was like, what, 2.5 hours long?
Yes.
And I remember sitting there in the theater thinking, what the hell is, no, I was a kid. I probably wasn't thinking, I wasn't thinking the profanities that I'm going to outlay here, but what the hell is this? Why is it taking them so long to find V'ger? I mean, what is he? And I was thinking, you know, there's a scene where the Enterprise flies over the V'ger spacecraft, and it takes like 10 minutes. And I'm thinking, when are they going to get inside the ship and fight this guy? And as we know, it doesn't happen that way. So I remember leaving the theater thinking, wow, that was awful. That was boring. And I recall, now that was in 79, so that I did not have any dealings with Trek until 1982. Now, what was the big thing in 1982 for me and my family? My dad came home from Ace Hardware, mind you, with our first VCR. Okay? This, now, he bought it at a hardware store, people. And this was the type of VCR, it was top loading. And it was this. There's a comedian that does this bit. I don't want to steal the bit from him. But it was one of those top loading VCRs where you hit the eject button, and with a big chuck chung, it would pop open, and you had to stand back and catch the VCR tape because it would fly out of the machine with such force, right? And it also had the remote that was wired to the device, so you could only sit maybe what 5 feet away from the VCR. So I know I just dated myself. Anyway. The first tape I rented was Star Trek II, right? And I had seen it, I think I saw it in the theaters. I don't recall, to be honest, but I remember watching that tape maybe 10 times. I loved that movie. And because I loved that movie so much, it made me watch the original series in syndication. And I burned through all of those episodes. I mean, every day after school at 3 o'clock, I was on whatever channel it was. I can't remember what channel at this point. But I went through the whole thing. Now, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit and say that after I went to college, I kind of fell off of Trek. And that's when they announced back in, you guys can correct me, back in 1987, they announced they were coming out with Star Trek The Next Generation. And they showed a press photo of the captain. I'm like, who is this old guy? Where's William Shatner? Where's the young, you know, masculine captain, you know? And then they showed a picture of Jonathan Frakes as Riker. And I thought, oh, well, that must be the captain. So then I started watching. I remember it like it was yesterday after classes. It was probably, I don't know, around 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. I turn it on, and sure enough, this old bald-headed dude walks onto the bridge, and he says he's Jean-Luc Picard, captain of the Enterprise. I'm like, oh, my God. And I watched it, and I thought the pilot was horrible. I was bored. It was so much of that Roddenberry, which Roddenberry's genius. He's a genius. But it was kind of like that Lucas thing where you're so glad he created it. Now maybe it's time to step back from it because it was mired in the 60s iteration, right? So I didn't like it. But then, back, that was 1987. So now jump ahead to 1992, 93. I'm out of college. I'm working in South Bend, Indiana. And a fellow Trek enthusiast, he asked me if I've ever seen Next Generation. I said, I can't stand that show. He's like, are you kidding me? I was like, I can't. That old guy, that captain, what's his name? He said to me, Mike, I want you to watch one episode. I was like, yeah, what's the name of the episode? Best of Both Worlds, Part One. Best of Both Worlds. That sounds like a Jimmy Stewart movie. What are you talking about? So I went down. I was working at a TV station, so I went down into the archives, and the TV station I was working for had bought the syndication rights to Next Generation. So I pulled out the 3/4 inch, made a copy on VHS, went home, popped it in. I sat there for an hour saying, I just watched a freaking movie. That was awesome. And I went back, just like I did with the original series. I saw Best of Both Worlds, fell in love, went back, started watching, burning off all those tapes. Every day at work, I would burn off maybe 3 or 4 episodes. And just, at that time, Next Generation was my favorite iteration of Star Trek. But ever since Next Generation, well, ever since the original series and after that I saw after seeing the motion picture, I've been a Star Trek fan ever since. So that's my story. Now, let's take it a little bit further. So, Big Sexy, what is it about Star Trek that attracts you the most?
Well, and I don't mean this to come across as a slam on Star Wars, but I like Star Trek because they fully develop other cultures along their journey. It's not about having one Klingon. Like in Star Wars, there's one, whatever Chewbacca is. Has there been another one? I have not seen it.
Well, in the prequels, they had a whole planet of them. But
okay, fine. There's one.
But the prequels suck, so I can understand if you...
You know, and with Star Trek, it really develops other cultures. And from a tech standpoint, so many things developed from the original series. The 3.5-inch floppy disk, flip phones, 16x9 TVs, all of that, Star Trek.
All right, wait, don't stop there. Microwaves?
Oh, shit, microwaves, iPads.
iPads, that came from Next Generation, I think.
They had those in
the They had one. Pads in the original series?
They had pads in the original series.
Hold on, I got to throw...
It's a stylus, though.
I got to throw a flag on the play. Craig, do you corroborate that?
I'm remembering back, but yeah, he's right. You have a stylus and a pad to hold. Exactly.
I don't remember that. Okay. Would you say the tricorders? What does that evolve into today?
Maybe like a palm pilot, but you know, that's pushing it.
Maybe like the Apple Newton, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah,
you know. That was a joke. Okay. But go continue, please.
You know, and again, the way Star Trek has always been presented has never insulted my intelligence. Uh-huh. That's why I like it. You know, it's written very smartly. It's written, I don't want to say it's written for adults, but it's written for people who have an understanding of things scientific, and it gives you an explanation. It doesn't just go in like the pack leads and say, look, we go and go fast. No, it explains how things work and why they work. That's why I like it. That's why, you know, have issues with other genres of science fiction, and I'll leave it at that. But I enjoy it because I enjoy, for instance, I enjoy Deep Space Nine, unlike my two compatriots here, because Deep Space Nine told an entire story. And I thought it was well done. And again, we learn more about alien cultures and how they do things and how we do them. And we look at how the Prime Directive does make us make hard choices at times.
Cool. I can't agree with you more. The technology, the forward-thinking technology is definitely one of the things I would say I like about Trek, but it's not by far the greatest thing. And I just got to tell a quick story. My best friend from childhood, I'm going to say his name, Richard Bryant. I remember we were working, we went to high school together, went to grade school and high school together. And we were working at this place during summer break. And we were, I don't know, painting a wall or something, scrubbing a floor. We worked as maintenance at this retreat center. And I remember talking to him about what he was going to study. We were talking about what we were going to do in college, when we went to college, what we wanted to study. And I said I wanted to go into film and TV. He said he wanted to go into the military. And I was like, the military? You want to get bossed around? Or this, you know, have to go out to war possibly? Or really? And I said, why? And he said, because it reminds me of Star Trek. And I didn't know what he meant by that. But as I got into Star Trek more and more, I think the thing I like about it most is that command structure, that protocol, that the strong leader. Now, I know Star Trek is not a military organization, so they claim, but that strong military style of command, a chain of command. I'm watching Voyager now, and Janeway, who is quickly becoming my favorite captain, she's not having it. She's the captain. Shatner, they're interchangeable. Shatner and Kirk, he was the captain. Avery Brooks as Sisko, he was the man. I just love the fact that you have this inspirational, I will follow you into battle. I will die for you. The Federation, I live and die for it. I'm not a war guy, but I believe in leadership, inspiration, motivation, and I have to say that's the biggest thing about Trek that I like. Barring that, I love all the techno babble. It sparks up the imagination inside of me. Like, I used to write things as a kid, you know, being inspired by Stan Lee and, like you said, Rod Serling. I would write my own little novels and draw my own little comic books. And some of the language I used directly came from Trek. If I needed the superhero to be able to shoot a laser beam and hit the bad guy, and it had to be explained, I knew all the words. I could come up with my own words based on all of the pseudo technical stuff they would say on Trek. And the last thing is, and everyone's going to say this, is that there's a social aspect. The original series, Gene Roddenberry, God bless him. I don't think there was another show. I think maybe you had the show with Diane Carroll. I can't remember the name of the show.
Julia,
right. You had shows like that. But on the original series, you had a black female running. Now, she was a secretary. Some people, the joke is she was a secretary or the receptionist. But no, she held her weight on that bridge. She was the one who would initiate contact whenever there was a ship that would come in within scanning distance. Open a frequency. What would they say? Open a channel. She was the one there. She was the one establishing that contact, the first contact. You had an Asian helmsman in Mr. Sulu. You had a Russian, which was really, if I'm not mistaken, that was really ballsy back in the 60s during the Cold War. You had a Russian at the helm. You had a Scotsman in the engineering room. Now, Roddenberry says he put the Scotsman in there. Maybe it's a little stereotypical because that's just what he grew up knowing, that, you know, Scots were... They were the lifeblood of the ship. They were in the engine room, making sure all the coal got fed into the fire, if that's the right term. But I just love the fact that this show said something in a tumultuous time, and Gene Roddenberry took a stand and said, this is how my show is going to be. Now, granted, you didn't get to see Kirk and Uhura actually kiss. They had to kind of futz that a little bit. But I love the fact that this show reflected what our society really looks like. And it also, if you look at it, you had a future, which I think nowadays, boy, we really need to know that we are going to survive into the 22nd and 23rd century. So even back then, the show was saying, we will survive. We will get into the future, and we will all do it together. And I think that's a message that's timeless. So, having said that, Craig, how about you? What is it that draws you to Trek?
I think the original thing that drew me to Trek as a kid, seeing it on film, was William Shatner's portrayal of Captain Kirk as a leader, as you said, but also as a human and able to talk to his staff using their first name instead of just always calling them engineer or whatever, which is how it started off. It sort of progressed. I also liked the fact that they just put these people together, and there was an alien on board, and there were females in positions and people from different cultures on the ship because that's just the way it's going to be in the future. And so it allowed us to think that, yes, this is probably how it's going to be in the future. People are just going to work together because that makes sense. And the technology that they introduced on the show, I believe, was mostly based on what scientists were telling the writers of Star Trek that is probably going to happen in the future, of their future being in the 60s, future in the 80s and so on. So they based it on real science, which was important because it made it more believable, I think. So when you're watching it, it was much more believable. For example, you can still believe in warp drive, right? I mean, scientists can explain to you that warp drive is possible, even, you know, but you have to build something that uses immense power to make it happen. But they basically did that. The transport was one of the things where, which is just in, because they couldn't figure out how to get to the planet or whatever. But still, you know, that's again, that's scientifically possible if you had enough equipment and enough power and so on. So I like that they were just, the show's premise was they're just out there checking out the universe and getting in touch with people and coming across alien races and so on. They were just doing that, which is, whereas in the 60s, we were nowhere near to doing anything like that. And so that's sort of what did it for me, I think.
Well, you know, you mentioned, I was trying to look it up, but you mentioned about warp drive. That's another thing. There is technology being developed now. If I'm not mistaken, I shot some sort of seminar, and Mae Jemison was in attendance. And there is a program that is being developed now where they are trying to develop a ship that will travel to Mars, I believe. I could be wrong about that, or will do sublight. I don't want to speak out of turn, but warp drive is not that inconceivable. So
that's no, it's not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
I think probably the one thing that did, I only found this out later on, obviously, but I was annoyed that people were so short-sighted back in the 60s that when Gene Roddenberry originally put his wife on as number one in the pilot, the cage, she was number one.
That's right.
Yep. And they just said, no one's ever going to believe that a woman can be number one, right? Which is silly. I mean, we're thinking about it now. It's like, what were these people smoking at the time to believe that a woman couldn't do that? And so she got relegated to being Nurse Chapel in the second pilot and throughout the original series. I thought that was actually depressing when I found out about it eventually, right? But I'm glad we've all moved past that, and we've finally got Captain Janeway as a captain in Voyager. So I just wanted to mention that.
I was going to say, it's funny. They leapfrog past number one to captain. And, you know, we're talking about on that topic, we can go even deeper. Back in 1984, we saw the first female captain of a starship, and she was an African-American captain as well. Mm-hmm. In Voyage Home. Right. Madge Sinclair, I believe the actress.
That's right. Madge Sinclair.
So, yeah, you're right. That's interesting. We didn't get a female first officer, but we did get three female captains. So, but now, I just want to move into another quick topic here. I've never been challenged on this. I want to see what you guys think. Okay. So, I contend that in all of pop culture history, American pop culture, or any pop culture in general, there has never been a more well-known, cohesive triumvirate other than Kirk, Spock, and Bones. I think those three characters are the most famous three characters in all of human history in terms of pop culture. Do you guys agree or disagree?
Let me think about this.
I think I agree only because I don't remember seeing any other shows where there's that triangle of actors or characters, really. I'm not really thinking of one, so, but yeah, they're very, very renowned, those three.
You know, I can't think of anything that could do top that. No,
I mean, you got maybe Luke, Han, and Chewie, but
nope.
When I think of Han, I don't necessarily think of Luke. When I think of, and I think it's the movies that kind of forms the root. For me, the movies are kind of the baseline and the original series. Because even in the later formations or iterations of Trek, you never saw the brotherhood that you saw between, I mean, these were boys. When you thought of Kirk, you always thought of Spock on his left hand and Bones on his right hand. And I don't think anything has ever come close to topping those three characters. I mean, you got Batman and Robin, but I don't have a third character there.
No, I was gonna say Alfred don't count.
You know? So I don't know, that relationship, you know, that's something that's never been duplicated in any of the other Trek series, and I think that's unfortunate. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
I think it is unfortunate. Yeah, it is definitely unfortunate. Yeah, I mean, especially if you Next Generation, Picard was a very different kind of captain, and he gave that air of superiority. He didn't really have that relationship with Worf and Riker, you know, and same with Janeway.
Those shows also were really more written as ensemble pieces. Whereas the original series was really about, you know, Kirk, and then to a lesser extent, you know, Spock and McCoy. People like Uhura and Sulu and Chekhov were there, but they weren't, you know, featured a lot.
And, you know, as you say that, I'm thinking, because I was thinking through this, part of that might be because, you know, it was a different time. It was in the 60s, and you had like the John Wayne, Gary Cooper, I don't know. That's about as far as I can go. Shane, maybe? Oh, Shane. Well, Shane was played by Gary Cooper, right? I believe. But you kind of had that threesome as the three cowboys, the guys who will go out and do things that no other captain would do in any later episodes. As we got into the 80s and the 90s and the aughts, it was all about more of a, I don't want to say a socialist type of thing where you had to share the wealth, as you said, Mark, with more of an ensemble cast. I think it was more later in the later iterations. It was more of we have to kind of spread this out. We have to include more female characters. We have to include more characters of other races, whether they're wearing Klingon makeup or they're wearing the Geordi eyepiece or not. You had to be more inclusive, which is fine. I welcome that, but back in the 60s, it was all about, these are our guys right here, and they're going to go out and wreck shop if they have to. So so that was something that was lost, and, you know, we gained more of an ensemble thinking. But, I tell you, Kirk, Spock, and Bones, you're not going to top that anywhere. I can't think of anything better than that. All right, so I guess unless anyone else has anything they want to throw into the ring here, I guess we're going to call this a show. Anything else we want to add?
Yeah, Star Trek is better than Star Wars.
We've got Rogue One coming out.
I'm looking forward to that, actually. I am.
So we have to be on our Rodney King. Can we do that? And
yes,
do that.
Q. We can get along, Q.
And what's my name again? Q? There you go. I'm part of the continuum, and I say, we will get along. Okay. So before we go, we're going to do it in the tradition of our podcast Juice Brethren and our King Michael Dean. Big Sexy, tell them where they can find you.
Well... I know I got a shot coming in the future, but I'll go ahead and put out there now. I can be found on Facebook under Mark Wiggins and on Twitter under Big Sexy in Sack.
And Mr. Craig, where can they find you?
Twitter at iBanyan is probably the best place. Obviously on Facebook, Craig Johnston, and a bunch of other places. Mostly using iBanyan. I use iBanyan everywhere.
All right. And just so the audience knows, that's iBanyan, iBanyan, iBanyan. And as I said, this is our first debut episode. If you have any comments or suggestions, please feel free to let us know. I'm not sure where we're going to end up just yet. We're going to try to get something going with putting this on iTunes, maybe SoundCloud. We're going to get this out there. We're going to get this out there because I know there are a ton of Trek fans out there that want to hear what we have to say. But as for now, we do have an email address, and that is redshirtspodcast.com. Once again, redshirtspodcast.com. So we're starting out small. Hopefully we'll grow We're going to expand from the Alpha Quadrant into the Delta Quadrant. But until that time, until next time, as you were. Red Shirts is not endorsed by Paramount Pictures, Viacom, or CBS. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. Star Trek, the Star Trek logo, and all names, pictures, and audio of Star Trek characters are registered trademarks and/or copyrights of their respective trademark and/or copyright holders.